Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Ruth Rolisoff. And wasn't it tremendous?
It was fantastic.
Very, very interesting.
I had two more questions, and then we didn't have time.
It goes so fast. You start the conversation, and you say you have a half hour, you'll have plenty of time. And then next thing you know, you just look at the clock and say, it's over. And again, I do this almost every week. It's kudos to Christina, who finds these people. And it's educational. It's entertainment. It's all different things. And now we're moving on to Eileen Corina, who is the president of Pulse Center for Patient Safety and Education and Advocacy. And what I always like to do, all these topics, I mean, we're going from, you know, dancing in the street now to safety, but I'd rather Eileen just start the conversation with, one, tell us about Pulse, two, tell us how you got involved, and then we take it from there.
All right, great. Well, thank you for having me.
No, thank you for taking the time.
Well, Pulse Center for Patient Safety was previously called Pulse of New York. We've been around 20 years, and we are a community-based patient safety organization. We work with families and the patient who are getting care and may be in need of additional support because of patient safety. And I'm recognizing that in just the past year, a couple of years, medical errors, studies show that medical errors are the third leading cause of death in the country.
I read that recently someplace. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because many people haven't. And the problem that we're seeing is that while hospitals and healthcare organizations and pharmaceuticals are working on patient safety, that information is not getting to the patient and their family member. And the person who has the most at stake is the patient and their family, and we're not involved enough.
Right.
I was very pleased to hear about Pulse because I think there's a tremendous need for that kind of organization. And a person has feelings. You know, they shouldn't be considered a cancer patient or a cancer case if they have cancer. A person has feelings, and that affects the care and the outcome. And I think you talk about communicating with the doctor and with the nurses, and I think that's so important. Tell us how you train people.
Well, we have a few different ways of training. Our actual, it's called family-centered patient advocacy training, is a 9-hour course. We could do it in one day, but it's better split up over a few days. So it's 3 hours a day.
Sinks in better, I think.
It sinks in Absolutely. Better. You come back, you're fresher each time, you learn and you think about it. So our 9-hour course is a certificate course, and that program is, we encourage people to become advocates, patient safety advocates. We specifically call it safety, to become advocates and with their family members. And the people who sign up for that are usually people who have families who are long-term care, have a disease, were recently diagnosed, or people who have been the caregiver for a family member, that person's deceased, and they want to continue what they've learned, and they've seen things that they want to become better at a communicator and as an advocate for their family. And a lot of healthcare professionals take our courses, too, because we're so focused on safety. We're all about safety and patient safety, not home safety, just in the healthcare setting. And that's not really getting taught enough in the healthcare industry.
Where can one take such a course?
Well, now we're actually working with Hofstra University and have continuing education course there. We're also, and that's actually coming up soon, next week. And also, we encourage people to host us in their community. So we can do that for a community group. We just did one in Harlem for a full day program for healthcare professionals in Harlem, and we will go where we're needed. We're going to other states also.
And what about the fee?
There is a fee. It's adjustable. We work with the if there's a sponsor, or we work with the community members about the fee. So there is. With Hofstra University, it's not a flexible fee because it is their program now. But when we do it in the community, we could talk about fee. Our bedside advocacy, there's never a fee. I'm doing that for over 10 years at the bedside, even though Pulse is around for 20 years. Specifically, being a bedside advocate with our volunteers, we never charge for that. So
I think a patient needs an advocate very much in a hospital setting, especially if the patient is so ill that he or she cannot speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. And what about, what do you do about a patient that does not have a family? There are people who are
alone. Many people. In almost every case, we have been able to work with patients and help them discover who their advocate might be. So if somebody says, I'm alone, I have no one, we're only there really if there's a safety problem. But to talk through who your advocate might be, we call care partners. And I have called friends and coworkers and even people who live in an apartment or if they're involved with a church group, and they're not thinking about that person as their advocate. And I will do the outreach and talk
That's
to them
wonderful.
About being
That's really
an advocate.
Wonderful.
And it's very important also to know who they don't want. So if they give me 10 names and somebody turns out to be, let's say, a smoker, and that person says, I'll do it, and they say, you know what, that's not a good idea, I could deal with that better than they can.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had an experience once with a medical error. My aunt was very ill a number of years ago, and I had come to the hospital from work. I was a teacher, and so I came about 4 o'clock, and I discovered that she was not in her room. And then I was told that she had been taken down the hall some time ago for tests. And I knew that she wasn't supposed to have any tests. So I rushed to the place where I found her. I found her in the hall, still waiting for the test, on a very narrow stretcher, and she was terribly uncomfortable. And I took a look at the record that was attached to the stretcher. It was a different name. And so she would have had to take a test, and it might have been an invasive test, and she was so ill. She died a few days later, and I was able to stop that test. And I told the doctor that this is not the patient. Now, that's terrible.
It is terrible. And those are the stories we want to hear, because as a patient or family member or friend, you avoided what could have been a very serious outcome. And it's very hard to measure that those kind of outcomes, which is what researchers want. Your story is very important to us, because we could now say your story to a group of community members, and they could say, you know, that happened to me too, and I didn't speak up, or maybe I won't be afraid to speak up because I have a story I can tell. That's the importance of what we do, is we're looking for solutions. It's not about blame. We don't make accusations. It's about, if we talk about it, we can all become advocates and really protect each other and become part of the team that we all want the same thing.
It not only would have been serious for her, but it would have been torturous.
And it would have been costly. So even if people are, you know, we want, of course, the most important thing is the patient's comfort and safety. But those people who don't want to hear that, what about the high cost of what that procedure would have cost the economy?
In hospital situations, there can be a little bit more control. But what is, like, the situations with just, you know, somebody's at home going to a doctor? I mean, how does it work in there? Because that's only a caregiver, and many times the caregiver is just maybe the spouse, a child. Who could it be? That is, wait a minute, Mom just got these pills. Okay, that's what the doctor said to give her, not knowing that the other doctor gave her some other pill, but nobody said the combination of these two were crazy.
Well, and that's a really good point, because we have something. First, when you hear, bring somebody with you to the doctor, always bring somebody with you to the doctor. We want to change that to bring somebody who is qualified to be your advocate to the doctor. And in our training, we show pictures of somebody who is not appropriate to be the person sitting at, you know, next to you at the doctor's office. They may have hearing problems. They may not want to speak up. They may not know how to read or write. What is the choice? The patient needs to choose the advocate. The advocate should not be choosing the patient. So we want patients to choose somebody, and it might not be somebody that you think it's going to be. It might not be the adult child. It may not be the spouse.
Right.
It may be a friend or neighbor. So we have that issue, very important, because it's not just bring somebody. And then we have something called a designated medication manager. There's a tremendous amount of statistics about the opioid use, and we hear about people who are addicted to opioids. And almost a third of all Medicare patients, nearly 12 million people were prescribed opioids in 2015, and if they're not qualified or understanding how to take them or when to take them, or if they're taking too many of them, then we have something called a designated medication manager. It's not a requirement. This is just a concept that you choose somebody as if you were choosing somebody to be your designated driver. Before you have those drinks, before you go into the bar, before you go to a restaurant and consume alcohol, you choose somebody before that to be your helper and understand your medication. So when you're going for surgery or you've been recently diagnosed and people say, oh, what can I do to help? Be my designated medication manager. And could you just help me understand my medications?
Okay. A question. Opioids. That's everyone, right? That's Oxy, that's Percocet, that's the whole gamut comes under that, or not?
I am far from an expert I want to be careful with that because I'm always nervous about saying all or everything.
Okay.
And we're even talking about taking two different blood pressure medications. So if we go into medication safety and errors at home or in the hospital, when a patient gets a brand name medication and then it's switched to a generic name, it still does the same thing. But if they have 10 left and they're now taking the 10 of the new ones or the new ones, they're now double dosing on their blood pressure medication.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we actually have visuals of this. We have pictures of medication that looks alike and sounds alike. And this is something that happens in hospitals. This is a problem that happens with nurses in hospitals. This is how mistakes happen. So understanding the concept of how I might be double dosing on my medication is really what we need to understand. And taking opioids when the doctor says or the prescription says take every 4 hours as needed, well, how do I know if I need it? But you told me to take it. So we have a case this week.
You keep taking it for the next couple.
You keep taking it, right. And then will they get a new prescription? Maybe you'd get a new prescription. You know, and this is where it lies. We just have been working with somebody who didn't want the medication, wanted just a pain, you know, ibuprofen or Tylenol, and got two bottles of 30 pills because her surgery was on the 19th. And she wasn't discharged until the 23rd. So the prescription for the 19th was written. And then when she was discharged, she went home with picked up two bottles of pills. If she followed that prescription and took one each from those prescriptions, she would have been double dosing, which I understand could be deadly if somebody has asthma.
So there should be somebody looking over to see what the prescriptions are.
There needs to be somebody they're not emotionally involved. They are enough where they want to be involved and not taking on too much. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to look at your prescriptions. And of course, as an advocate, we want advocates to ask permission.
Right.
Can I help you with this?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to take a first break, Ruth. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.